The deaths of five Al Jazeera journalists in an Israeli airstrike on Sunday have prompted condemnation from around the world. Hundreds of mourners carried their bodies through the streets of Gaza City yesterday. The UN and the EU called the attack a breach of international law. The Palestinian mission to the UN said the journalists had exposed and documented Israel's genocide and starvation, a charge we've heard Israel deny. Members of the National Union of Journalists in Ireland gathered at the Spire in Dublin yesterday evening to express solidarity with those killed at the weekend. Our reporter Scott Stevens spoke to some of the journalists there, including Seamus Dooley, who is Assistant General Secretary of the NUJ.
There is no evidence to prove the Israeli government's claim that these were agents of Hamas. This is a trope which has been produced time and time again. It is important to say that both the International Federation of Journalists and the NUJ have been critical of Israel's treatment and targeting of journalists long before October of last year. But this is a particularly vile incident. It is an attempt to close down Al Jazeera in Gaza at a time when international media are not allowed to enter. And therefore, we have described it as a war on truth and an attempt before Israel moves to the next phase to ensure that the truth is concealed.
I come from the same street in which Lira McKee was murdered on. And when Lira McKee died, this country stopped. And it was all anybody wanted to talk about, and rightly so. But Lira McKee's life is equal to a Palestinian journalist's life. And I want us to be as up in arms about our murdered colleagues in Gaza as we are about our murdered colleagues here, like we saw for Farhana Gigir and like we saw for Lira McKee, because the murder and targeting of journalists is a war crime, and I don't know why we're not calling it what it is.
It's sort of with a weary inevitability that I hear of another one of my colleagues being bombed and slandered like this. Whatever the mechanism happens to be, it seems that we're just not going to be allowed to hear the truth from there. Or at least, even if you're not prepared to accept it as the truth, if you're someone who's going to say, whatever it takes, that this is a Hamas operative, we're not going to hear a Palestinian side of the story. And that offends me as a professional journalist.
What do you think needs to be done to ensure the safety of journalists in Gaza?
Well, I think the more we highlight it, the more programmes like Morning Ireland highlight this, the more journalists speak out, the more politicians speak out. I think the tide is turning. A lot of people in the world now are saying this is not acceptable, that the plan, you know, that Netanyahu has for Gaza, that this is not acceptable. And, you know, I think we have to not give up hope. This is a really important thing. Sometimes, and I'm sure your listeners and a lot of us, some days you might feel like giving up hope, but we can't afford to, not for those people in Gaza.
Some of those at the Dublin vigil speaking to Scott Stevens. One of those killed on Sunday was 28-year-old Anas al-Sharif. For millions of viewers across the Middle East, he was the face of the war in Gaza, appearing on Al Jazeera from the enclave. You'll see his picture on the front page of many of the papers this morning. In a statement he left behind in case of his assassination, he begged the world, "Do not forget Gaza." It was the first time during the war that Israel's military has swiftly claimed responsibility after a journalist was killed in a strike. The IDF alleged he had served as the head of a terrorist cell in Hamas, an allegation that Al Jazeera dismissed as baseless. Asad Abu Shark is a relative of Anas al-Sharif and knew him as a young boy. He also attended the vigil in Dublin and spoke about why he believes Israel has not allowed foreign media into Gaza.
They don't want facts and truth to be seen to the whole world, and they don't want the whole world to know about their crimes and atrocities and brutalities against the Palestinian people. And this is why they killed Palestinian journalists, and they prevented journalists from all over to go in order not to be witness to this genocide which they are committing against the Palestinian people.
So how does it make you feel when you hear Israel say that the journalists that were killed on Sunday night were associated with Hamas?
No, this is part of their baloney. They have always been saying, let me tell you something. If you are against Israel, they say either you are anti-Semitic or you are a sin, if you are a Jew, a self-hating Jew, and they accuse even your president, they accuse even your prime minister here of being anti-Semitic. Imagine, this is a joke. This is a joke. This is, you know, because this is a sign of bankruptcy. They want to accuse the whole world because what Israel is doing is genocide. And this is why they say, well, the easiest thing is to label, to accuse of terrorism.
Asad Abu Shark. Don Mullen, journalist and author of Eyewitness Bloody Sunday, was also at the vigil.
I'm best remembered for my book Eyewitness Bloody Sunday. And I was a schoolboy witness to that massacre in Derry on the 30th of January 1972. And we have to remember in the immediate aftermath of Bloody Sunday, the British Army sent out misinformation stating that when they moved into the bogside, they commanded a fuselage of bombs and bullets that they fired back at targeted gunmen. And they also claimed that some of those who were shot dead that day were on the Army's wanted list, all of which were lies. And it's the same thing today in terms of, you know, trying to suggest that at least one of the journalists was a member of Hamas. They have one of the most sophisticated and resourced propaganda machines in the world. And I think we have to continually now question anything that Israel says. You know, when the Hamas Ministry for Health gives out numbers, you know, there's always a writer that's saying, stated by. And I think now that, you know, when Israel says anything, we must say that in the absence of verification, this is what they're saying, because we have the right to question anything they say. I was a schoolboy witness, Scott, to Bloody Sunday. And even as a 69-year-old man now, I was 15 at the time, there are 3 minutes of that day, the memory of which I've never, ever been able to recover. So traumatic was the experience. And, you know, thinking that it's now 674 days since October 7th, 2023. And in that period, Israel has killed 63,000 civilians. And if we divide that number, you know, we get 94 deaths per day. And you divide that by the number of people who died on Bloody Sunday, that means the people of Gaza, you know, are suffering the equivalent of 7 Bloody Sundays every day, or the equivalent of almost 5,000 Bloody Sundays since this began. And it's just unconscionable. It's just unconscionable.
Don Mullen there speaking to our reporter, Scott Stevens. We're joined now by Luke Moffat, Professor of Human Rights and International Humanitarian Law at Queen's University Belfast. Good morning, Luke. Thanks for joining us.
Good morning, Jackie. Thanks for having me.
Luke, under international humanitarian law, journalists are classified as civilians and must be protected. Targeting them constitutes a war crime. Is what happened to Anas al-Sharif and his colleagues a war crime?
Well, we don't have all the information from what the Israeli Defence Forces have provided. Hasn't been released sufficient evidence to suggest that they weren't civilians. So in other words, if you're a journalist, you're protected unless and at such time you take a direct part in hostilities. And so the IDF is saying that he was an active member of Hamas, but they haven't produced the evidence for that. So if that's not the case, and I would say that this is, you know, one incident where there's been dozens, there's been over 186 journalists killed around Gaza, that this would support like a plan or policy of intentionally killing civilians as a war crime. And what that means is you're not trying to target the enemy, you're just murdering people. And that's what international law is set up to sort of prevent and punish.
Well, what evidence would you need to prove a war crime then, Luke?
Well, it's complex, but you would need to show that there's sufficient, you know, wrongful acts, so that these people were not members of Hamas, and that they were civilians, and that the evidence used by the commanders in authorising the strike wasn't what a reasonable, you know, army commander would use in attacking a person. It would go against the sort of presumption that somebody is a civilian up until such time they take a direct part in hostilities. Reporting the news, even, you know, spreading propaganda, which he wasn't doing. But that's not enough. You know, you need to take an active and direct part in the war, and there hasn't been any evidence to do that. Another thing is, why drop a bomb on journalists? Why not just arrest them? You know, it seems disproportionate, not just, you know, the intentional killing of civilians, but it's disproportionate, it's excessive in what needs to be done.
So what do you make of that supposed evidence that Israel has put out claiming that he was a Hamas operative? It suggested that he had documents, that documents found in Gaza confirmed Mr. Sharif belonged to Hamas. It said it included personal rosters, list of terrorist training courses, phone directories and salary documents.
Well, yeah, like we haven't actually, there's been a lot of reporters asking, a lot of journalists from different outlets asking for the actual, you know, the documents themselves. And the IDF hasn't provided it. They've only provided screenshots.
So they haven't been verified.
Phone numbers and lists. No, there's been no verification of that evidence. And you're talking about the most, one of the most advanced militaries in the world, which uses, you know, artificial intelligence, big supercomputing. They have massive amount of surveillance on the Palestinian population. So why can't they just provide the evidence to support this?
So when we look at this, what investigations could take place here, Luke? Where could this all start?
Well, Ireland, the UK and 123 other states around the world are members of the International Criminal Court. So they've got an obligation to investigate and prosecute war crimes. The International Criminal Court itself already has arrest warrants issued against Netanyahu and his former defence minister, Yovan Gallant. It's not just the commanders, it's also the political leaders, it's the generals who could be responsible, and also the foot soldiers, many of whom have got dual nationality. And so it's up to states to investigate these crimes and arrest these people if they come into the country.
Luke Moffat, Professor of Human Rights and International Humanitarian Law at Queen's University Belfast, thank you very much for joining us. It's 8:30.